This episode of the Antlers and Hicks podcast is brought to you by Bloodline Custom Calls. I've been a fan of Bloodline Custom Calls for several years now. I've gotten in touch and gotten a good friendship with Jason Cooper and the boys over at Bloodline, and they make some of the best turkey calls I've heard. They also have some outstanding merchandise, so go check them out. BloodlineCustomCalls.com, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out Bloodline Custom Calls. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. It's coming up on bow season. I'm trying to live a life. I'm trying to run trail cameras, trying to get stands set up. And let me tell you something, it is hectic. That's where the Wise Eye Sail Cam comes in handy from Wise Eye Technology. Guys, this camera is the most innovative camera on the market right now. What the camera will do is it will take a picture of deer and text it to you just like any other sail cam does. But what it also does is it sends a system called Hunt Control, the GPS location of where that picture was taken. Hunt Control then looks at the weather, looks at the lunar phase, looks at the wind, looks at everything, and breaks down when this deer was moving and why. Also, if you have multiple Wise Eye cameras in the field and this particular deer you're after walks past those Wise Eyes, they will take a picture of it, put it in a file folder that all the cameras keep up with. Now you have a folder specifically for that deer. That's right. This camera can pick out the deer that you're targeting. It's got a facial recognition system that it recognizes these deer and charts them. Takes out all the legwork that you have to do, simplifies it, tells you when they're moving, so that gives you the best opportunity to get on top of that target animal. They can be found at hogfathers.com and on amazon.com. They can also be bought in person at K&M Coffee Corks and Camo in the great town of Farmerville, Louisiana, out there on the highway going over on Lake Darby on Highway 33. So go check them out. Wise Eye Trail Cams. You got to check them out. They are impressive. This week's podcast is one I know you're going to enjoy. Tyler Parrott, St. Francisville, Louisiana. This guy got one on opening day that people travel out of state to get. Not only is it a 158-inch deer, it's got 9 points, which you like, 158 at 9 points? Yeah, that's how big it is. And on top of it, it's full velvet. Yeah. People go to Kentucky for this. This guy's killing them in St. Francis. This is the second one he's killed in full velvet. Not this year, but, you know, in his archery career. So, guy's pretty good. Got a good place to be. And he knows what he's doing. And you'll hear it in this podcast. So, let's give a listen to Tyler and the story on this big full velvet, big 9 point. I live in Sterlington.
In Sterlington, okay. Yeah. I'm from up your way originally. Not quite to Sterlington, but I'm north central Louisiana. I grew up in Minden, and then my family's all around the Ruston, Arcadia area.
Okay, well, that's cool, man. The Dubberly, Minden, that area, there's, and I guess because you're getting toward the Red River, it's real good hunting.
Real nice deer over there. I got a lot of people that I grew up with and went to school with that hunt that area, and they do pretty well.
Yeah, I tell you, the Loggy Bay, when you go over towards the Shreveport area as far as public land, those are some, there are some hammers that come all down that Red River area.
Yeah, Loggy Bay, I've never hunted it, but I've always kind of said I wanted to. It produces some nice deer every year.
Yeah, it does. So Tyler, tell us a little bit about your background. You know, you talked about being, how long did you spend up this way toward Minden?
I was born in Ruston and lived up in Ruston, Minden, and then back to Ruston area all the way up until I was about 24 when I moved away. Went to Louisiana Tech and met my wife there, and she's from the St. Francisville area. So I moved down here in 2014 and have been in this area since then. We both moved right after we graduated.
Okay. Had you previously hunted in that area before, or did you just really start when you moved to St. Francisville?
I hunted for a couple of years while my wife and I were dating, but prior to that, no, her family's been in the parish in this area for a long, long time, and they've got property that they raise cattle on and such. And so when we started dating, I kind of began to hunt down here some, and then when we moved here, I really was able to hunt here a lot, and pretty fortunate, got some good property. So
yeah.
It's in a real good part of the state to hunt for sure.
Now I want to ask you, you're one of the fortunate ones that I can ask this. How does hunting down in that area differ from the hills of North Louisiana? A lot of people don't understand that hunting in Louisiana, it's a whole different entity. No matter where you go, it's got its own challenges.
Yeah, there's some drastic differences. The quality of the deer is definitely better, just the nutrition and stuff. But actually hunting them, man, it's weird. Like I grew up hunting all pine timber and red clay hills, and it's, you know, you're hunting lots and lots of heavy thickets and lots of planted pines and such as that. So it's the way the deer move and travel is a lot different. Here I've got planted pines that we hunt around, but there's a lot more big hardwoods and ravines and rolling hills, a lot of cow pasture, that kind of stuff. So I always have focused on, you know, pinch points and funnels and such as that, but hunting those big pine thickets and timber, it's just it's a different setup, different game plan. I feel like you gotta find these areas that are a little more open where you can actually make some, you know, cover some area, I guess, on a lot of this piney hills country that I grew up hunting. And down here, it's, I don't know, sometimes deer act a little more like deer down here.
Yeah.
They can be a little more responsive to being a little more aggressive and just, I don't know, they have some general differences as far as that goes. You can actually kind of see them interacting the way deer are supposed to interact. And North Louisiana, it's a challenge to get on mature deer and be successful year after year up there for sure.
Yeah,
in those piney hills,
the body size differs pretty good, yeah, bit too.
Yeah, I've killed so when I was living in North Louisiana, I grew up hunting there until I was, like I said, until I was about 23, 24, and the biggest body deer weight wise that I ever killed was probably 195 pounds, and that was a 5.5-year-old 8-point. It scored 131 inches. He's a great deer, especially for the area he was killed, but you know, that's what you're looking at, is 180, 190 pound deer most of the time. And here I shot a deer 2 years ago that weighed 237 pounds. And they're a little shorter stature down here, as far as like the length of the deer doesn't seem to be the same. They're not as stretched out and long as a lot of the deer seem to be up in north central Louisiana where I grew up, but they're just fat, just heavy, thick, really well taken care of deer as far as nutrition goes.
Yeah. So how long have you been bow hunting?
So I started bow hunting when I was probably 16 or 17. Started hunting when I was as old enough to get in a deer stand with my dad, but didn't start bow hunting until I was 16 or 17. My dad never really bow hunted, so I kind of just self-taught my way into it.
Yeah. Did you do you remember your first bow? What kind was it? I know I had a bear. My first one, my old man, he handed me like a bear, a black bear.
I had a PSE Nova that someone gave me. Actually, I was doing some work with my dad. My dad was an electrician, and we were doing some work. And when they paid my dad, they knew I was wanting to start bow hunting. So the guy said he had quit bow hunting, so he handed me his PSE Nova and about a half a dozen aluminum arrows that were all cut to different lengths with probably 4 different kinds of fletchings, and yep. I think about half of them were bent, and I really didn't know what I was doing, but I went to Walmart and bought the cheapest release they had, and that's kind of where I started. But
I think we've all started there. You know, I had a Cobra release I got from Walmart.
And I think I had the Cobra release too. I think it's probably, probably what I started with. And then for the first one that I actually killed a deer with was a bear bow. It was a, I can't even remember the name of it now, but it was a split limb bear bow that they made back in probably 05, 06, 04, somewhere in there.
Okay. Well, I tell you, man, that animal you got on the ground this weekend, That's special. I mean, it's not only for their size, but just the full velvet. That's goodness gracious. Yeah,
this is one of the, I'm still kind of in shock. It's been 3 days and I'm still kind of reeling over all this, but he was a real special deer. I honestly didn't think he was going to be quite as big as he was. I knew he was a really nice deer, and I had him, actually I've had him on camera for a couple of seasons, and 2 seasons ago I had said that I wasn't going to shoot him, and he was a mainframe 8, and he was a really nice deer, and I ended up never seeing him in person, so I didn't have to make that decision, thank goodness. And then last season I actually shot this deer and hit him in his shoulder and got very little to no penetration, took an angle I shouldn't have, took a 1/4-2 angle, and just squared up the shoulder. We put dog on him, spent lots of time looking for him, but just knew from what I had with the arrow that it, wasn't likely he was going to die. And ultimately he ended up showing back up 3 weeks later on the same spot, but never daylighted again the rest of the season. So I was hopeful that he was going to start showing back up this summer. And one of the first deer that I got on camera back probably in June or July, I was pretty sure it was him with the antlers that are starting to develop. So I was thinking, I think that might be the deer. And as he got bigger, I realized, yeah, that's him. And he blew up this year. I'm guessing he was probably upper 130s last year as a 10 point. And this year he jumped to 158, which I wasn't expecting that, but it's pretty special. And for the fact that he held on to his velvet, this part of the state is really about the only part of the state where I feel like you can consistently get on deer still in velvet. This West Feliciana, East Feliciana area, and then right into South Mississippi, just north of us here, they kind of seem to hold on to it a little longer. The deer really hold on to their antlers longer as a whole in this area. So whereas in North Louisiana, most of our deer were dropping antlers in late February and March, down here sometimes it's early May before some of them shed.
Yeah.
And April is probably the most often time that I see them shedding.
Yeah,
start finding sheds. And I think that's just the antler development starts a little later, so therefore they hold on to the velvet a little longer here.
And I would almost assume that the late rut would have something to do with all that as well.
And I would imagine that as well. I've actually got 2 sets of fawns on camera right now that I, based on when they started showing up and the size of them, that they didn't drop till about 3 weeks ago, which would have put the does being bred into February, first weekend of March. So. Yeah. That we get some trickle down real late into the season, and our peak rut is probably, I don't know, in and around January, 4th to the 10th, 11th is probably our peak breeding. And so it just seems like everything holds on a little later. It's actually my second velvet buck since I moved down here. I shot a 9 point 5 years ago that was a 123-inch deer in full velvet as well. So I've been pretty fortunate on that.
Yeah, I stalked your Facebook photographs like I told you earlier, and I saw that one. I'm like, man, this guy, he's got 2 in velvet,
That's something I didn't expect to do in Louisiana, and then I moved down here, and I was like, dang, there's a real chance I might kill some velvet deer here, because they'll hold on for the first 3 or 4 or 5 days of season. So I was like, if I can get it done early, I might can get some, but it still proves to be a challenge, because a lot of times I'm only hunting 1 or 2 or 3 deer that I've, that I'm got on camera, and I'm only wanting to kill those 3 or 2 or 3, and then if they shed their velvet, then there goes that opportunity. But it just worked out this time.
Yeah, well, I tell you, man, that is an awesome animal, and you've got a little history with him. How did it feel last year? Did you, when you shot him and you didn't make the recovery, I mean, I imagine until he showed up those 3 weeks later, it was were just sitting on pins and needles, weren't you?
I was constantly. I've got a cell camera in the area that he frequents, and I every time I think it dinged on my phone, I was looking at it in the middle of the night. My wife was sick of me looking at my phone trying to find out if it was him or not. And I only got, I think, 3 pictures of him for the remainder of season, and I shot him the 3rd week of October. So he'd never started frequenting again. So it definitely had me nervous. I was like, oh, man, I hope this deer just, please make it. That's all I can hope. And then I was kind of half expecting him this year to show up with a deformed rack or something like that, because he was a beautiful slick 10 point last year. But thank goodness it didn't cause any weakness on that other side this time.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you is if, you know, because I know that, you know, if you shot him on the left side and his right side rack, you know, if he had any type of like a broken bone or anything like that, the right will mess up at right side. The rack seemed ideal. I mean, it seemed, you know, other than, was it 9 point?
Yeah, he lost his G4 on the opposite side from where I injured him last year. Now, whether or not that had anything to do with the injury, he had no deficit from the injury as far as how he walked or anything like that. I've actually got some cell video of him from this summer, and when he walked in, when I shot him, he was no limp or any gimp in his step or anything like that. And so I don't know whether he dropped that G4 on the left side because of the injury, or if he just dropped it, you know, just happened out of genetics, to not grow a G4 on this time.
But, huh, interesting.
He did go from a 10 to a 9.
Did the arrow come completely out, or did it break off in him?
It actually broke off, and I never found the arrow, in all honesty. We looked and looked and looked, and I don't know how far into the story you read on this deer. I don't know which post you saw, but the deer actually got eaten by coyotes overnight because I had to let him lay. I hit him, so he was quartering away from me pretty hard, and I had, when I shot the deer, I had, I think, 12 deer in and around the in front of me, and I'd been watching him for probably close to 10 minutes because he was facing straight away from me. And I was hunting over some feed in a area in a big hardwood flat under some cleared out hardwoods that we cleaned up a few years ago. And the deer were all around me, but nothing had gotten downwind of me. Well, after about 5 minutes of watching this buck facing straight away from me, two does looped around and were working their way behind me, and the wind was fixing to be blowing. I mean, they were making a beeline straight downwind of me, and I started getting a little nervous. I was thinking, man, if they get downwind and start blowing, this whole thing could come apart. And about that time, another 10 point that actually was with him. He's a real pretty 3.5-year-old deer, probably 120 to 125 inch deer. Was out there and walked around the tree and got too close to this buck. And when he did, the bigger buck jumped at him and kind of opened up and gave me a quarter and away shot. And with those does working behind me, I said, you know, this might be the time I need to take this shot. So I took a fairly steep quarter and away angle, but not a crazy angle. And I put it on his last rib and released. And as I released, he started to turn back to face away from me again. So it entered at the front of his back ham and angled up into his stomach. And I knew when I saw the arrow go in, I was like, oh man, that's, I mean, it's a lethal shot, but it's not ideal for sure.
Right.
And so I let him lay for 3 hours, came back to the house, and I was like, you know, I'm going to just go back there and see if I see my arrow laying anywhere close. And then so I went back after about 3 hours just to see if the arrow was close by. Didn't see anything, but found a little spotty blood that went down the hill behind the stand, and said, you know what, I'm not going to take the chance of bumping him. I know it's in the guts. I don't know how far it got up into the rib cage or anything like that. So let him lay overnight. With the temperatures were supposed to drop down around 52, 51. I was thinking, you know, if he's gut shot, it'll take him a while to die, and he probably will still be good in the morning. And unfortunately, we found him after about 10 minutes the next morning. He had only gone about 250 yards, and but the coyotes had found him well before we had, apparently, because they did a number on him.
I tell you, I shot one this weekend myself.
Did you?
And the shot, when I shot, I knew that it was, I think I got the last rib, but I had my phone out, and I had it in my little stand, and I was videoing. And when I played that footage back, it looked questionable. And when I got down there to the arrow, it had bile all over the arrow. So I didn't even walk out in the woods a bit. That same,
I've bumped a gut shot deer before, and that's a great way to never recover a deer.
You better know it is. They're going to go a little ways, and they're going to stop. And if you bump him, he's going to go as far as he can go.
And, until he drops.
That's right.
And I've made that mistake before, and in previous years on a couple of does early in my years of hunting and bow hunting, and I know better now. And I definitely knew a deer of this caliber. I didn't want to take that chance. So
yeah, and I was a younger hunter than the ones I bumped as well. And you get all excited and you want to make the recovery, and but you got to understand something. If there's any young people out there listening, there's two old heads right here talking and telling you, just be patient. If you have any question about a shot, just wait, man. Just pull back and just wait. Trust me, it's better to find the deer, and even if the coyotes got it, you know, it's just a chance you take, but at least you made a recovery, you know?
Yep. And don't have to have a lot of sleepless nights thinking, you know, did I push him? Did he die? Did he live? What happened? You know, it gives you some closure on the story at least, and able to,
Now, I'm going to have to call you out because you said not a lot of sleepless nights. Brother, let's be honest. You didn't sleep.
None.
You didn't sleep a lick.
I was sick to my stomach and very, very sleepless night, Saturday night. And I played it in my head about 5,000 times and had already convinced myself that maybe I didn't kill this deer by the time we got out there the next morning. And then, like I said, it was fortunately, I had a fellow that I had bring some dogs out just in case, you know, knowing it's a gut shot deer, knowing the blood was going to be spotty, and the dogs went straight to the deer. It was a really, really easy track for them. They almost seemed disappointed that they didn't have to work harder, but it was definitely a sleepless night.
Yeah. When I wanted to go out on mine the other night, but there again, you know, I knew better. And of course my dog handler, one of my good buddies, he was working graveyards. And so that really helped out. You know, it kind of was like, well, I know I'm not even going to go out there. And, you know, just when you can go out, that's one thing that I think everybody should have on speed dial. Especially if you're a bow hunter, you better have a good dog on speed dial that you can call.
Because anybody who says that they've never made a bad shot on a deer with a bow just hadn't been hunting long enough. We've always heard that, but that's the truth. It happens. And some people it happens more frequently than others, but it still happens. It's one of those things. In this situation, in all honesty, I've made bad shots on deer with a bow, and I felt really good on this shot and don't really think that the shot was terrible. The deer just started to move as I released, and things like that happen. And it's just having a good dog on speed dial is always a good insurance plan.
That's right. And when you get them out there, and you may second this, you know, some of these guys don't charge. They'll come out, they'll track your dog, your deer. They won't charge you a thing.
And there's a whole network, I mean, I'm sure you know about it, of blood trailers all over the state. And I really respect what those guys do, that spend their hard time and energy and gas and everything and drive out and don't expect anything in return, which that takes a lot for somebody to just come get out of their bed in the middle of the night to come look for someone else's deer that they don't know and do it for free.
So that's right. You know, Gary and I were talking the other day when he was, this is just how I live, man. I learned a long time. I'm not dragging anything through the woods I'm not going to eat. So I'll break the animal down right there where he lays, put him in my backpack, and I'm coming out. So Gary's sitting there and we're talking, and he's like, you know, I enjoy coming out here and just watching my dog work. He said, I spend so much time with these animals. They're like my children. And then when they can come out here and be successful, you know, it's just like I killed the deer at that point. So I respect that.
Yeah. And I really feel like that's a lot of the joy that a lot of those handlers get out of it, is that they just enjoy seeing the dog work. And it's almost become like hunting to a lot of the dog handlers. It's that they get that kind of enjoyment out of it. And, I think that's pretty awesome. Definitely something I respect, the people who put in their time and energy, you know, and they have full-time jobs and have to wake up early in the morning and still come out and do it, that kind of thing for people. It's
sure
pretty awesome.
And I'll tell you this, you know, a lot of us don't carry cash on hand anymore, but, you know, a Christmas present to that dog in the way of a bag of food or some treats or something, man, that's the way to go. That's the way to keep that handler happy and help you get him coming back and helping you.
Absolutely. I always try to do, if I have to call on somebody and they don't want to accept anything, I at least try to get some gas money for coming out and some treats for the dog or something like that.
Yep. So now you may have said, and I may have missed it, how far was the deer when you made your shot?
Oh, he was 31 yards. Okay. So I, it was, Actually, he if I could have wrote a script for what I wanted this deer to do, he followed it to the T, and except for staying broadside for about another 3 seconds so that I could have got a shot off broadside. But
Yeah.
otherwise, he did exactly what I had hoped that he would do, and exactly the same thing that he did last year. Literally, I shot him 7 yards from where he was standing last year, and he came down the same trail and popped out in the same place. So it was pretty wild to see him do the same thing right over again.
That's cool that you get second chances, man. I mean,
Oh man, I'm fortunate with that.
yeah,
That doesn't happen often.
it really
So
doesn't. It
you
really
get a
doesn't.
deer. I mean, he was mature last year. I haven't pulled the jawbone on this deer because he was, like I said, he was laid overnight. So, and I'm sending him to the taxidermist, but he's either 5 or 6. I'm kind of thinking he's a 6-year-old. I really think he might have been 5 last year, but he's a deer that age. It's really hard to get one crack at him, especially with a bow. Getting 2 in 2 years, I'm blessed in that aspect. It just worked out for the
Yeah,
best this time.
I'll tell you, you're blessed, man. So let's break it down like bow hunters do. What kind of gear are you using? What kind of bow you got?
So I've got a Matthews Halon 32, and I shoot Victory V-Force arrows and use Grim Reaper. I actually switched to because of this deer, I switched to the all steel Grim Reaper mechanicals this year. I've been shooting Grim Reapers for quite a few years and had great results with them. But the only downfall I've noticed is that with like any mechanical broadhead with an aluminum ferrule, they will bend and get a little damaged and probably don't have quite the punch if you do hit a bone. So I switched to their all steel version mechanical, and I've had really good luck and good results with it. I like it a lot. But
You know, I didn't know Grim Reaper made that
they
off
do
that.
they make an all steel mechanical. They're called the Fatal Steels. They make a couple of different diameter cuts. Because they're all steel, they're not quite as big a cut as their aluminum ferrule broadheads, but they still knock a pretty good hole, and I've had some pretty good results with them so far.
Do they come a light grain, or are they going to be a heavier grain
They're
broadhead?
100s, and they've got them in 100s and 125s.
I'm going to look at this.
I shoot a 125, and I think it's an inch and a half cut, and then the 100 grains I think come in an inch and a quarter, or an inch and 3/8. It's a little bit smaller cut in the
Okay.
100 grain.
Yeah, I shot Rage for a while, and then, of course, I drank the Kool-Aid last year and got on the single bevel fixed blade, two blade thing, and
Yeah.
I lost a deer and lost a hog. So I quickly maneuvered my way back, and I started shooting a Mega Meat. But
And I.
you know, they're
I've heard
okay.
good things about those as well. Actually, the archery shop I used to go to, the guy that ran the shop, he was a big fan of the dead meats before the mega meats, and I'd heard they were solid mechanicals, but I had never tried them.
Well, true to form with me, I was shooting 125s last year because I went to that heavier broadhead. Well, when I went back to mechanical, I said, shoot, man, I'm going back to 100 grain. Well, I couldn't find any Mega Meat this year in 100 grain, so I had to get the dead meat, and that's what I killed my deer the other day was the dead meat. And I mean, I was as pleased as punch with that one. Like I said before, it was a kind of a questionable shot, but you know, deer bled. You know, I had a lot, like I said before, it went through the, looked like it went through the liver, but got a good blood trail. I'm pleased with the dead meat, but man, you've got me with that steel Grim Reaper, man. You've got me at least wanting to go look at them.
I'll tell you what, man, the first deer I shot with it was last year. I shot in January. I shot a buck on public land, and quartering two just a touch at about 37 yards, and I put it through the shoulder blade, and it punched straight through the shoulder blade, quartered, and came out on the last rib on the offside, or the second to last rib on the offside, and that deer ran 35 yards. And everybody always says this, but it looked like someone walked around with a paint bucket. It was the most unbelievable blood trail that I've ever seen, and that includes all the deer that I've shot with the 2-inch Grim Reapers. It was better than those. It was pretty impressive what it did. And I pulled the broadhead off the end of it, took it back to the camp, washed it off, cleaned it out, and not a nick in the blade, not a
Really?
thing. It looks brand new. I put it's in my quiver right now. It's on there as one of my last arrows in case a hog or something comes out. Because I never even replaced the blades on it. It looks like brand new.
Well, I tell you,
I was pretty impressed with that after punching it through a shoulder blade.
Isn't that the truth? You've definitely got my attention. I'm going to look next time I'm in. Next time I'm in an archery shop, I'm going to start looking for these for sure.
Yeah, they're a solid hit for sure.
So give me some measurements on the deer. What do you remember them off the top of your head?
If you give me about 2 seconds, I can. Hold on just a second. I'm going to put you on speaker here. But so I remember a good many of them. His main beams were 22 5/8 and 22 3/8. So long, long beams. He was 17 7/8 inside. The crazy thing about this deer was, and he looks big in the pictures, but pictures just really can't do him justice because I've killed a lot of nice deer, and I realize how hard it is for a mainframe 9 point to get to 158 inches. So it's hard, and I never would have guessed that he was that size, but his left base was 6 3/8, and his right base was 6 6/8, and it's really hard to get a picture to do that justice. The mass he carries is unbelievable.
Yeah.
His smallest mass measurement all the way out, you know, between his G3 and the end of his main beam was right at 4 inches.
Yeah. When you said it was over six at the base, I said, I bet an area mass measurement went under 4 inches.
There was one measurement on it, on his side with four on it. It had, the last measurement was 3 6/8. It was just under four. So that starts to add up pretty quick. And his G2s were both just under 12 inches as well. So that, you know, he kind of had a little bit of everything, tine length, tons of mass, long main beams, good spread. So it just all added up quickly.
And that's how a 9 point gets there. You know, yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, people ask me, you know, I score for Buckmasters and people say, well, what is it? You know, what does a deer mainly got to have? And I was like, well, one of the, you know, main characteristics is just really got to have points, man. The more points you got, the better it's going
to
be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's way easier to get to 140 with a 10-point than it is with an 8-point.
Absolutely.
It's a different – and I honestly, so it's always kind of in recent years been a joke. I've killed senior in between 131 and 138 inches, but the joke was that I can't ever get one over 140. I can lay them down in the 130s, but I can't ever get one over 140. Well, I finally managed to get that done. So,
heck yeah. Hey, who scored your deer for you?
I actually scored this one myself.
Look,
not going to say I'm a professional at scoring, but I'm pretty proficient at it and have well read on the subject and spent a lot of time scoring my deer and lots of other people's deer. So I'm pretty confident with it. I'm not, like I said, not a professional, and I tried not to stretch the tape or cheat him any, but I am planning on getting him professionally scored for the Pope and Young book.
Absolutely.
After the 60-day drying period. So
yeah, and I tell you what, if you come up this way, holler at me. We'll get together, and I'll get a score for Buckmasters for you.
Absolutely, absolutely, man. That'd be great. I will be up that way at some point. Actually, my taxidermist is in Houghton, so I've got coming to North Louisiana at some point soon.
And that's what I was going to also tell you. Give the taxidermist some love. Are you going to be able to preserve the velvet?
Oh yeah, he is. Yeah. I got a great taxidermist, and lots of people already know about him. But Harmon Carson.
I've seen
Houghton.
Him on the.
He's a great taxidermist. He's probably an even better hunter.
I was going to say he's solid on behind the bow.
I was going to say I think he could kill a 150 in Walmart parking lot with a recurve. So. He's a pretty impressive guy, but he does some fantastic taxidermy, and he and I have already been in touch, and he's going to try to bring it to life for me. The only thing we got going against us is that the coyotes did leave me with very little cape to work with, and we're hopeful that there's enough there that he can salvage it and we don't have to get a donor cape, but he's going to give it a shot, and if anybody can do it, it'll be him. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, look, man, I don't want to hold you up. I know you got family time, and it's getting late, but I really, really, really appreciate you taking time out of your day to come out here and talk to us. And maybe it won't be the last time. I'd like to talk to you again. It sounds like you know what you're doing, man.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. I'm a little obsessed with it. I've been eat up with it for as long as I could, get out in the woods. So, I'd love to talk again. I appreciate you reaching out to me, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We'll talk at you later, brother.
All right, you take care.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Man, it was a great podcast with Tyler. I'm really glad I got with him tonight. Good guy, speaks well, and really has a good love of archery. Fortunate enough to have a good place to go. And, man, he got a great deer. And, I try to end these things with some positive stuff, either a scriptural quote or something like that. But what I want to talk to you guys today is if you're going to be an archer, I don't care if you've got a crossbow, compound, or you're going traditional, two things is going to happen. You're going to be humble. That's the first thing that's going to happen. You will be humbled, and you're going to have to learn patience. Once you master those two things, you have got it. A great quote behind this comes from Tolstoy. The two most powerful warriors are patience and time. And trust me, over time, with archery, you will have to learn patience. And when you do, you're going to be a deadly machine. Don't push it. Don't rush a shot. Don't rush a track. Always wait. You've got to wait for the most opportune time. That's what makes archery so much fun. I'm telling you, I love it. That's why I love it. Now, don't get me wrong. I'll pick a rifle up just as quick as the next man during the rut. But when it comes down to bow hunting, that's what it's all about, is learning the dance of patience, when to do what you need to do. Guys, as I always end it, this is the Antlers and Hicks podcast. I'm Greg Hicks, and I'm always going to encourage you to live your life past 20 yards. We'll see you next time.